Around the NFL Podcast. Can't figure out what XFL stands for.
That's not true. Extreme Football League. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast presented by SiriusXM. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey,
right?
Dan.
Right? X is extreme.
Right. So the so that came from a listener, and the listener has listened to a series of shows and views us as mental dolts.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
The league also has, you know, been, well, please.
Happy Friday, everybody. How's everybody doing? Greg?
I'm great.
Good until I heard that. Now annoyed.
I get it. Wes, you got the winter cap on here in Austin,
Los Angeles. Well, I came in with nothing but this polo shirt on, and then it was, you know, it was like a meat locker in here, so put the old gray shirt and a hat on.
Wednesday, and make sure you get it, and make sure you check it out if you haven't yet, because I'm sure your fantasy draft is this weekend or in the week coming. The Fantasy Extravaganza. It was the 25th annual Fantasy Extravaganza, and what a celebration it was to mark that milestone. So I didn't get a chance to bring it up, but I wanted to make one more point, nugget that I got, Mark, from the Wessling Rosenthal Rich Eisen show appearance, which, again, went over like gangbusters everywhere you turn.
A lot of social media action around that appearance.
The guys look great, and I mentioned this on Instagram and Twitter, but I want to say it in person. You guys looked really good on camera. Fit, well-dressed.
Fit?
Yeah.
That's generous.
Well-spoken. It was just a nice thing to see. Represented the brand well. But I didn't want to mention, Mark, that I heard through the grapevine that you know, Wes, he positions himself as the man sitting at the top of the common man rankings, okay?
Sure, he does.
Famously.
Yeah.
You know, Birdie told me that he took a limo to the Rich Eisen show.
Wait a minute.
There was no limo.
That cannot be true, Wes.
That is erroneous. There was no limo. And the poor driver had to take out a baby seat to put us in.
It was a car service.
It was a yes.
Close enough.
If it was offered, what am I going to do? Not take it?
Let's actually, I have footage, the west side of Cincinnati, a working class area. Let's cut to the west side of Cincinnati. Their reaction to the news. Oh, is that Wes's mom?
They're worked up, and they should be.
In Wes's defense, he doesn't drive an automobile these days, which is kind of a common man thing. So, you know, if you get offered a free ride.
The common man thing is Uber. Get in the pickup truck and rumble over to DirecTV headquarters.
Or I would say just a simple Uber X, the lowest tier Uber offering.
You could expense it easily with the company paper.
I'm sure Wes has a very cooked up, appropriate response to this, though.
I was told by the people in the west side of Cincinnati that I was getting uppity when I wore Dockers once in a while.
One thing I learned during that episode, sitting behind the glass, is that you guys are ass. I now understand. I'm in here and I become one too. But when I'm back there, I realize these guys are impossible to deal with.
Total vultures.
They are living up on clouds, and I just was appalled by what I viewed, especially off air.
Sobering stuff, Mark. Coming up on the Friday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, some preseason Week 3. Takeaways. There was a bushel of games played Thursday in what used to be the most important week on the preseason calendar. And I guess it still is, but it's different now. It's just different. It's just not treated in the same way it once was. But there are takeaways, and we will share them. Also, Greg wrote a banger.
Yeah, he did.
What was that? 5,000 words?
Troop alert.
Drop a 5,000 word banger on us.
No, it was 20. It was under 2,500.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice work. Alert. Anyway, biggest training camp surprises going city by city by city. Now, Mark, would an ass say that? Look at all the compliments I'm paying to the group today.
Can you stop saying it so I have to go back and bleep all these words? Like keeps saying the word ass. Also, I have to go back and do all this work.
Whenever you are buttering anyone up, it is for a purpose.
Nick Fortier. Get that drop right there.
So Greg wrote about from his viewpoint, the biggest camp surprises in each city. So we'll hit that. But before that, let's do some news.
Going broke buying hype, but I know what I like, because I'm banking on the Brown to be that winning type. Total wins too. Digits grab the credit and swipe. Go ahead, turn up, change the stereotype. Jay Dorsey spinning it, making the right pick. Imagination at work, call him General Electric.
Ooh.
Flick moves one after the other. All this new talent, man, it pays to discover. Dog Pound, let me hear you bark that noise. Freddie, ready with the Cleveland boys. Hey. Maker in the back with the stash and poise. Better believe Lynn got some brand new toys.
Yay.
Boy, Brown making D's shiver. Light the league on fire like the Cuyahoga River.
Woo!
Never seen flows hot like these are. Cardi C best in the pocket since Bernie Kosar.
Yay!
Oh!
Wow.
That was not Cardi B. That was Connie Fox, a.k.a. the Tiny Box, Colleen Wolf, this morning on Good Morning Football. All about your Browns, Mark.
I'm blown away. And I, you know, one little, there's so much to unpack there, but she mentioned Baker Mayfield's fashion poise. And I, you know what, obviously, he did the GQ thing, and I've seen all the tweets, everyone calling what the coat he wore, his grandmother's coat, all this other stuff. Let's be real about one thing, and now it's his turn to be ripped apart for his fashion choices. Every one of these quarterbacks that does one of these fashion spreads, and really any rich male, any male that becomes super rich,
sure,
starts wearing clothing that is so beyond what any of us would ever comprehend putting on that he's just like anyone else at this point. It's not like he's set new. Give me a break with the Mark Sanchez spreadsheet. Like that to me was next level.
Right, he's not picking these clothes. The only question is whether he takes them with him. I mean, I think Baker's at the point he's just taking those clothes.
Right.
Was it? I thought that was like a joke on Twitter. That was actually his grandmother's coat?
No, it's just that it looked very much like a coat a grandmother from any century might put on.
Gotcha.
Yes. Any century.
Connie Fox, wow.
Yeah. She did a great job.
She wrote that?
Yes, she did. She did, and she performed it, and I think she won the rap battle between her, Nate Burleson.
As predicted.
And Kyle Brandt.
Wow.
Nicely done.
That hurts, Nate. You know it does.
Cam Newton got hurt. Unbelievable. On Thursday, he left the preseason game against the Patriots with a foot injury. He left the stadium in a walking boot. And Rap Sheet reported Friday that an x-ray and other tests, he was diagnosed with a mid-foot sprain in his left foot. General manager Marty Herney told Rap Sheet that the team is, quote, cautiously optimistic that Newton will be ready for week one against the Rams. Week one, which is now, you know, just over 2 weeks away. And Wes, you know, we didn't mention Cam Newton in the fantasy extravaganza during the stay away chatter, but he was on my list just didn't get a chance to bring him up. I'm a little bit nervous about Cam because obviously any 30-year-old quarterback that's had two shoulder surgeries, you get nervous. But he's also had ankle surgery. Now this foot is right connected to that ankle. Is it possible that a guy that's taken a lot of abuse over the years, he's breaking down? Is that a real concern to be having if you're a Panthers fan? Because it's a scary one.
Well, I mean, is it possible? Sure, but I don't know. It seems more like bad luck to me than breaking down a mid-foot sprain. To me, the greater concern is that I haven't liked what I've seen out of Will Greer, the quarterback they drafted in the third round. Guys like Ryan Finley, the Bengals mid-round pick, and Jared Stidham, the Patriots mid-round pick, look a lot better. I've been impressed with Easton Stick a little bit from the Chargers, but Will Greer has not played well.
And he got rave reviews coming out of the draft.
It's a bummer because Cam Newton got really good reviews in practice for his arm looking great, like throwing the deep ball pretty well. He's got the new motion. You're kind of excited to see this new Cam, and now he's going to be coming in to a brutal week one matchup as it is with an injury. Even if he plays, you would think they're going to try to limit him being their goal line, you know, back, which he essentially is in that time. And you just hate like going into the season that way. I don't blame them though. Like everyone said, like, see, this just shows you can't play your players in the preseason. I just feel like that's a little too easy. Like every team is a little different. Certain teams believe that it's going to help. If you're playing football, you're going to be at a risk. It's a bummer when they get hurt in week one too. And it's not any
that could
different.
Happen in practice. What if
right,
watch the
just,
play he got injured on?
It's just it's going to happen if you're playing football. The Patriots thought it was important for Tom Brady to play football. I think he did too. And it's like everyone's going to make their own call, but that doesn't mean
I think
never play.
And Wes nailed it with the bad luck, but I mean because Newton in 2014 he fractured a rib in a preseason game and missed regular season action. To Dan's point, he's had a concussion. There's some of these guys, I like to call them just like a bug, because they're constantly getting the injury bug biting them left and right. We're always talking about their injuries.
Cam Newton a bug?
A bug. Like it's December in 2014. He gets into a random car accident. It's bad luck. I'm not saying it's his fault. I don't know how that
is. My point being is that the car accident, a perfect example. That's rotten luck. And yeah, injuries suck and they're rotten luck too. But when they start to pile up for a guy that his plays a certain way, I would just be starting to get nervous if I was a Panthers fan. But
he might want to reconsider those glamour scooter shoots on his way to the stadium.
Yes. I mean, for multiple reasons.
And it is, like you said, he's got a very tough matchup against the Rams, Greg. And it was a bummer watching a diminished version of Newton labor through those last five or so starts last season. And now you have a situation for the Panthers who just want to turn the page, and now you might have a hobbled Newton in week one. We'll see what kind of progress he makes as we get closer to that Sunday. Moving on, bad news on the throne of sleaze. Patriots safety Patrick Chung has been indicted by a grand jury on a charge of cocaine possession. This occurred in Meredith, New Hampshire on June 25th. The felony charge is only one charge Chung is facing. The felony charge is the only one Chung is facing. No other individual is involved. He has a court date coming up. He doesn't have to appear at it. His lawyer can appear on his behalf. That's an August 28th arraignment. So we'll see how this gets sorted out. But Greg, Chung is an important part of that defense, and this is a pretty heavy off-the-field situation to be hanging over him.
It's unclear what it's going to mean for his status. Whether could he be playing week one? Could he be suspended? Could he just be away from the team for the whole year? Like, no one has any idea. But to your point, a huge Patriots fan who we all know well, let's call him Burke, I mean, texted me apoplectic after this, thinking that after Stephon Gilmore and Tom Brady, that Patrick Chung might be the third most valuable Patriot. I'm like, all right, let's calm down there. I know he covers tight ends well and he's versatile, but let's calm down with that. It does mean, though, that Daron Harmon, who's been a starter the last few years and some people thought would maybe not make this team, might get traded to one of those Patriots South or West coming out of camp. Looks like he'll make the team. I think that's kind of my takeaway, because they're going to need him now.
Ill planning, though, because it sounds like when you piece together the report that an alarm went off or something that alerted the police, who were going there to help, obviously, and assist, and then bang, you know, your house is not put together
so the
way you
the
need it to be.
They're in the house checking on a burglar alarm?
I think to help the civilian that lives there instead of the civilians.
I think maybe in that spot, the cops give a little wink. Patrick, clean up the snow. Something like that.
They feel differently.
Yeah,
in Meredith,
get the
New
shovel
Hampshire.
Out.
You got to get off
Erica
the grid.
Erica knows how it operates in New Hampshire.
Get the snowplow out,
you
Pat.
You
got to
get off the grid.
Meredith,
none of these
right
alarm
here,
systems.
This big lake, the biggest lake in New Hampshire, Meredith, is Lake Winnipesaukee. Mm. And it gets kind of wild up there,
up
you
in
know.
The Pissock?
It does. I don't think they call it that, but.
And I don't know enough about that. I'm not obviously making any comment about Patrick Chung's guilt or innocence, but it is interesting that I feel like every 6 to 9 months, there's some like mega criminal charge connected to the New England Patriots.
Just, here we go.
I just, you know, connect the dots over the years. I know everybody, there's team players and front office officials get in trouble from every organization.
You've got quarterbacks, you know, dispensing their phones and dumpsters because they don't want those to be examined. You know, it's a broad.
I would just say take out the red string, you know, the red string in criminal investigations, and then just go basically year to year. It's going to go a through line.
Manhunter season 3.
Yes, no, maybe so, Greg.
What? That they get? There's been a lot. There's been a lot of gates. There's been a lot of, you know,
stuff,
crime,
whatnot.
They get more attention,
and they've checked all the boxes, like at the level from petty misdemeanors to capital murder and everything in between,
like stumbling naked into a police station.
That too. There's the ones that are more humor based. Okay, I'm gonna move on.
It's too bad. Chung's been a great story. You know, he left home. He came back. He's won 3 rings since he's been back. You know, he's been much better since they originally cut him back in the day or traded him.
This is the poor guy. Deepest Patriots defense I remember in years.
They're gonna be good again. All right, let's move on. Michael Crabtree, he's back. 2 weeks after working out for the Cardinals, left without a deal, the veteran wideout agrees to terms with Arizona on a 1-year deal. He joins a group of receivers led by veteran Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, Keyshawn Johnson. not Keyshawn, Andy Isabella and Hakeem Butler. Kevin White, the former Bears first-round pick, he got cut. I guess that's Crabtree essentially replaces Kevin White on this depth chart. Crabtree, 31 years old, Mark, spent last season with the Ravens, had a big role in the offense, at least until Lamar Jackson showed up and had 607 yards receiving, three touchdowns. A guy that maybe finds a way to catch the ball in the end zone, but not the most explosive guy at this point of his career.
I mean, I gather that they brought him in initially. A, obviously he's available, but that he played under Mike Leach at Texas Tech, so he's very familiar with the offense. And I think, you know, you opened Cardinals camp, and there was this buzz about Kevin White and where Kevin White might end up in the offense. For us, it's all wait and see, and he's gone. And they also lost to Keem Butler, so there's a spot there, but the Keyshawn Johnson news is interesting to me because it was Josh Weinfuss of ESPN that said he may have had the best training camp of anyone on the Cardinals roster, veteran or rookie alike. So they need people to step up and turn into glue for Kyler Murray right away.
Well, Keyshawn Johnson's a six-round rookie, very shifty, quick. They want to play with four receivers, and this shows why. You know, when we project the starters, I do this, and, you know, fantasy owners are drafting Andy Isabella. It's just like, well, they're going to have four receivers, and you know, they like the college evaluation of Andy Isabella, and they like Hakeem Butler, and that's going to be their four. And you just never know with rookies. Isabella just doesn't look like he's ready to go. And to me, this is basically, we don't want to play this guy. We like Keyshawn Johnson, and Crabtree's going to be in there, and that's our top four with Kirk and Fitzgerald.
I'd like to point out that in the last two off seasons, the two teams with among the worst wide receiver cores in the league have said the way to get better is to get rid of Michael Crabtree. And now a team with one of the worst wide receiver cores in the NFL has said a way to get better is to bring in Michael Crabtree.
I think he can still play. He's savvy, though. You know, remember there was that report where they couldn't get a deal done with Crabtree 2 weeks ago? What has he done in between? He fired his agent, and then he hired the same agent who represents Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury.
Spot.
Which seems like a conflict of interest when you're representing the number one overall pick and the coach. And
worked out.
There's a lot of that.
Do you know what Crabtree?
Watching you, agents.
There's a lot of young wide receivers on that roster and a young quarterback. You know what Crabtree feels like to me, Wes? Bill Parcells coined it once upon a time.
Progress stopper.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Let's move on.
It's also a big play stopper.
Cowboys. Cowboys make a big deal. Oh, man, a big contract, but not with one of the players you might expect. They reached agreement on a long-term deal earlier this week with linebacker Jalen Smith. The Cowboys made the deal official after a rap sheet report. Stephen Jones said Tuesday the extension is for 5 years and is worth $64 million, including $35.5 million guaranteed. He's under contract through the 2024 season. If you're a listener of this podcast, you've heard Chris Wessling singing the praises of Smith all throughout the 2018 season. And he's such a great story after what happened at Notre Dame, where he looked like a stone-cold top-five pick, suffers a terrible knee injury, and you're not sure if he's ever going to be able to play in the NFL. It does affect his draft stock, but the Cowboys took a chance, Wes. They took him high in the second round. He sat out his rookie year and became one of the best linebackers in football.
Yeah, it's a great story. At one point, he had drop foot syndrome, and he had no range of motion in his lower leg. It's an amazing story. Nobody thought that he was going to come back and be one of the best linebackers in football, which he was for the last few months of last season, along with Leighton Vander Esch.
He is a guy that you could tell, even in his second, but definitely last year, his third year, he's such a leader for that team that he's
an impressive human.
We talked to him, remember?
Right. And okay. And the Cowboys in training camp, the way that they would talk about it, even in his second year, you could just tell the influence he has over all of them and the way he approaches and kind of the joy he has and the way he talks about Leighton Vander Esch, and the two of them seem like just a perfect pair to sign forever. And I saw some criticism that's like, you know, this is a relatively team-friendly deal. Like, he could have gotten more money if you waited out. Like, this is a guy who had his entire career flash before his eyes, is happy to have it. He's 2 years away from free agency, and I hate that where you're like trying to get into someone else's money, saying that you should have tried to get more money. It's like his generations are secured for, you know, his sons and his, you know, and the next generation after that. Like, don't tell people not to sign a big contract if they want to. Shut up.
And I mean, the Cowboys, you know, I can't think of a team in a person more than Jerry Jones who is attracted to high risk, high reward draft picks. And they don't like Randy Gregory, not working out at this point. And essentially you could look at him and say, maybe you stretched on that one. But this was viewed that way too. And it has worked out beautifully. And I like a team that once you find that position group that is stacked, you don't decide we're going to keep one, move someone else, and go lower money at the position. So a lot of teams do that, and their general managers can't figure out a way to keep all these guys, keep this group together. Their defense has gotten so much better.
And I'll give Smith the last word, because in his press conference he said, pointing back to the Cowboys essentially taking that risk on him in the second round, here's what he had to say.
You took a risk. You know, a $4.5 million risk, you know, had I never been able to play again. So me understanding that it was my duty for them to get the return on their investment. And they've been able to do that. And, you know, now fortunate enough to really be a Cowboy for life is just what, it's what I wanted.
It's a good story. I like those stories. Now, Cowboys, keep doing work so we don't have to talk about contracts anymore. And big
well, there's three more to discuss. It's not going away tonight.
Injury news from the preseason. Drew Lock on Monday Night Football, preseason edition, sprained his throwing hand, and that's going to cost them a lot of time. It sets back the Broncos' second-round rookie to the point where he could start the season on IR boomerang. Is that right, Mark?
Yes, but I hear some flack. Some people are saying I prefer IR boomerang, and people are telling me that they like boomerang IR, that rolls off the tongue.
I always thought that sounded better, personally.
No, I like IR boomerang.
Again, it only goes back to the fact that it's not sticking on any level as a true term because people
it's
can't even
something.
Describe what
right.
what's happening.
Like,
with
Erica, if you could describe in 30 words or less, what is IR boomerang?
Put it on the spot.
What, like in football terms?
Yes.
It's like people that bounce off and on the injury report.
I mean, that's about 70%, right?
She's very close.
It's like a new rule for new listeners. You know, injured reserve used to mean you're out for the season, but now you can put a player on injured reserve and they can come back as early as, I believe, 8 weeks is the earliest.
But isn't it two players now?
Yeah, you can do two players now. That is IR boomerang.
I believe you said bounce back. And
yeah.
It's sort of like idea that the boomerang, you're sending them far out of field and you know, if
it returns.
For
but
a frisbee,
it
it's gone.
Yeah,
it's not IR frisbee. That thing's in the woods.
This is almost like, it almost takes Vic Fangio and John Elway off the hook because it would have been embarrassing when Kevin Hogan was their backup week one, which I think he would have been whether
really?
Locke was hurt or not.
I don't know.
I don't know that for sure, but I just think Luck. One of my takeaways from this, you know, preseason is just there. You know, Joe Flacco's playing this season. I would have thought
good.
But even if the rest of the team is terrible, or if some, you know, if he doesn't play as well, if they were like 1-3, I would have expected. Okay, now everyone's going to be talking Luck. Luck's not playing until it's week 16. And if the Broncos are out of it, like, I just I don't think there's any chance.
Mouth.
I'm saying if, you know.
So a boomerang, boomerang IR is sort of like a side piece.
IR boomerang.
You can keep them there. You know, you kind of keep them out of the limelight. You don't, you know, it's
bury
not,
them
it's
in
not,
the backyard for a while.
Right. But then you know what they say, Wes? You can always dig them back up.
You can always dig them back up.
Side piece and someone buried
because,
in the yard, like, sounds
because it doesn't cost you all this money,
ominous.
Right? It doesn't, you know, you're not going out to
the
dinner
side
every
piece,
week.
Yeah,
you're not going out to dinner every week.
They can cost money, I would imagine.
Or as Lil Debbie said, side hoe.
I mean, they're paid a full salary, so it breaks down a little there. But
right. By the way, has anyone ever seen?
But they come back.
Has anyone ever seen someone successfully throw a boomerang? It's impossible.
I owned one as a child.
Did you ever throw it and it came back to you, or even
not
close?
Really? No, you can. No,
it basically goes straight and then hooks right and then lands about 37 feet away from you.
You're running after
they
it.
They suck.
Typically. Yeah.
And Australian listeners, you know it too.
I was just going to say, over under 100 tweets you're going to get from Australia.
Right. And it's another reminder of how much better life is just in general, just in terms of like quality of life now than before in most of the world.
Yeah. This is such a Greg thing.
What about all the mental illness?
No, I mean, there's a lot. Greg. At some point, though, when they invented the boomerang, it's like, wow, that's the best entertainment option we've got. Like,
I don't think this is
the biggest revolution that, you know, we've had in entertainment in decades.
Wasn't it meant for
hunting? Boomerang.
Yeah, it was a hunting tool, I believe.
It's a piece of garbage.
It's for sustenance and survival.
Don't
also.
Come at me with facts. Buried my bit.
Finally in the news, step behind the red velvet, gentlemen. Matt Nagy's back in the headlines for all the wrong reasons. We've been tracking this. I mean, no podcast has been hitting this story harder, how the Bears have been handling their search for a kicker after the double doink, Cody Parkey. SI drops a hammer. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read this. It's required reading if this is a saga that interests you. Really digging in on what exactly the Bears have done this offseason. They brought in 9 kickers. 9 kickers, brought them in like cattle for slaughter and herded them together and used a bizarre scoring system that Byzantine, does that work in this
scenario? Yeah, that totally, that's perfect.
To try to explain how they were progressing, then cut them at will, had little notes, humiliated the men, didn't treat them like football players. And then they were left with 4, and now we're down to 1 poor guy. Who's the last guy there?
Eddie Pinheiro.
Eddie Pinheiro,
right?
Who I'm really scared for.
I don't think he's going to be their week one kicker. I think
so they held a competition?
Usually you bring in like at most 3 or 4 kickers if you're really looking. The Bears brought in 9, and it's a really great story about
this. Is in some way draconian?
Dude, all the kickers.
Feels like an old Hollywood casting call.
If you can't take the pressure of a kicking competition, what are you going to do with 5 seconds on the clock?
Here's what Notre Dame's Justin Yoon. Well, you're in lockstep with Matt Nagy, but everybody else thought it was ridiculous. I was connected to it. Justin Yoon, a kicker for Notre Dame, had this to say. It's not efficient for the team to continuously beat that one dead horse the whole time. You have to build a system of confidence for your kicker. I don't think that's how the Bears are running it. And shout out to Yoon for actually speaking out. A lot of other kickers, they
guy's
spoke
never gonna
badly,
make it.
And they spoke anonymously. Yoon,
Bears kickers, if you go look around, their comments, I think what they were sort of saying in general as camp pressed on was exhaustion with the day-to-day pressure.
With the 43-yard stuff,
yeah,
and the
stuff.
Augusta silence.
How soft are these guys?
I'm not arguing that they're not soft.
It's a hard job,
Wes. Most people aren't.
I know, that's the point. But Bill Parcells used to walk up to Vinatieri as a rookie and start putting voodoo on him and walking across his path in the middle of the kick.
It's a results business, and the Bears coaches have gotten terrible results. So shouldn't they bear some blame here? That whatever they're doing,
$5 million at a good kicker.
It's not working.
But
someone should have signed your buddy Myers. He was available, Jason Myers.
Can we Bears? Can we start some games before we say it's not working?
That's fair. My point is this whole process isn't working because if I could, I'm guessing none of these players will play for the Bears in a regular season game, including Eddie Pinheiro. Their kicker will be someone that's on another roster.
Well, then that makes it all the more ridiculous. Yeah, because then how much money have you sunk into airline flights and hotels and all this other
stuff? And you're just going to take Matt Bryan off the golf course in a week.
Absurd.
Why isn't Matt Bryan playing for anybody?
I don't know. I didn't want to bring up because I want the Jets to quietly sign him, but I have a responsibility to listeners to mention that he would make sense.
So you think your influence is that great that
it's global
that
audience. Greg.
Deep state front office men in the Bears complex are now going to figure out that Matt Bryan's available.
Shh. Want him going to Florham Park? That's what's happening in the news. All right, let's do some quick preseason Thursday takeaways. I am so tired of preseason. And I respect you guys if you have a ton of notes to share on this. And we could do a beefy 20-minute segment on the 7 games that were played last night. But I'm not going to share too much. So I'm going to let you guys handle the bulk of this. Greg, get us going. What was something from the Thursday action? Please. Week one.
There was a very significant development in the Redskins game, which is that Darius Geis played football at the pro level for the first time and looked good. And that is a big step for a guy who still hadn't been cleared until this week to be in a game and looked like kind of the Darius Geis that we saw in highlights in college. I mean, I wouldn't say he looked great, but there were enough to build off of for a first appearance that you're like, okay, he's going to be a factor week one. That was a big development.
There were a couple runs where I wondered if his speed was all there, but he laid a nasty stiff arm on someone. They gave him the first 6 carries and 11 in all, and they gave him a catch. And for me, after you talk about him, you have no idea what behind the scenes how hard they're working to get their body back, and it's a good story for a team that is weapons depleted.
And a team that could use some good news.
A team that lost a tight end last night,
Jordan
too,
Reed,
for the 18th time.
We joke about when I make my jokes about Tyler Eifert and how I believe in him, and he gets hurt every year, so don't take him seriously. With Jordan Reed, and I hope this isn't a serious head injury he has.
Well, that was one of the worst hits I've ever seen a player take to a head. I think any play, I feel really bad for him. And I've seen some
it's terrible.
Joking Jordan Reed stuff today, but that was a vicious brain injury, and he's had a lot of them. But man, that was a tough hit to watch on replay.
And in a preseason game, Wes.
Mark and I can tag team this one because we both watched Jaguars Dolphins, and I thought that Josh Allen, the Jaguars' number one pick, there may be a couple teams regretting not drafting him. He is a huge player. The size speed combination is very impressive, and to me he looked like, I told Mark, like a roadhouse bouncer during the middle of a midnight melee, just hip tossing guys out the saloon doors while somebody's breaking a chair over his back. He's just going through the Dolphins offensive line like they weren't there.
He was Vinovich-esque.
Yes.
For me I have question marks about how the John DeFilippo and Nick Foles offense is going to work in their overall Doug Marrone world and everything. That, you know, Leonard Fournette looked good last night, I thought, which was a nice development. But they're going to need to keep restocking defense over and over. And Josh Allen, there's a play, if you can go find this on Twitter. Obviously, you're playing.
Who? Us?
The listener, anyone who heard that. You know, there is a Dolphins right side of the line with Jesse Davis and Deion Calhoun, two guys that just got absolutely... Josh Allen just took kind of both of them with his arms and just swept them aside and buried a running back like 9 yards in the backfield. This is a guy that I think anyone who drafted anyone else above him, and they all have the reasons to pick who they did, are going to be measured by how Josh Allen does.
In the most impressive play to me was one where he flexed out and covered a running back in the passing game, I think it was Kalen Ballage, and destroyed him.
Yes.
And you just don't see that from guys that are essentially playing a defensive line. And the announcer kept making, I forget who was it, a good point that Allen's going to change up the way they do defense because they're always very traditional 4-3, but he's more of a stand-up guy. And when he's out there, it just makes him more flexible. Not as if that defense needed any more good news. Be fun.
When Josh Rosen led that 13-play, 99-yard drive, which was impressive, I thought, all right, that's cool. Now do it with Josh Allen out there.
Right. Josh Rosen's gotten some pop, and we'll switch into that last few weeks. And he makes some really impressive throws, and he did that in this game. But I didn't watch that game and think, Josh Rosen made his move. It's one drive, and it was against the backups. And Fitzpatrick has not looked sharp in the preseason, which is worth noting, but Flores seems to have already decided, based on practices, that there really isn't a competition. And Troy Aikman,
Troy Aikman made a comment, and you know, obviously he's hearing stuff and spending time with the coaches, that it made it sound like Josh Rosen just has not really grasped the offense or picked it up the way that you'd want him to, and that they just feel more comfortable. And that Ryan Fitzpatrick has looked bad in games, but the whole Fitzpatrick experience has the coaching staff feeling much more comfortable. I read his comment and basically said Fitzpatrick starting week one, barring him getting, you know, like a rock landing on him from the sky.
You get the vibe that there's still, hopefully not too big, you get the vibe that that baggage connected to him is still there. Charlie Casserly, our own Charlie Casserly was on the show. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but Charlie made news earlier this year for making critical comments or based on a conversation he had on Josh Rosen. And, you know, you wonder if he's going to get it, Rosen. But he's going to start, right?
He will eventually. And he has made some great throws. And Aikman, who, you know, has seen Rosen play a lot at UCLA. I mean, he said he thinks he's one of the most talented throwers he's ever seen, period.
Rosen. He had that
just
great
coming from Troy Aikman. And I can kind of see why you would say that. Man, he has two or three every game that are just, they're an unbelievable play. So at some point, they're just going to want to see it. But that offensive line looks so bad that, I don't know, no one's going to succeed there.
He's not the most mobile guy, but he made a nice throw and he kind of rolled out and put one right in the receiver's hands, rolled to his right. The tools are definitely there. Speaking of toolsy young quarterbacks, Daniel Jones continues to look really good for the Giants. Danny Dimes, which is nice. I saw that.
I like that.
Pop up. You know, he's 25 of 30, and don't read too much into preseason stats, obviously, but 25 of 30, 369, two touchdowns. He's lost some fumbles, but hasn't thrown an interception, taken two sacks, and Eli's barely played, and this is the best possible outcome for Daniel Jones, what's happened the last 3 weeks, that he has planted that seed now in not just Pat Shurmur's mind, but all the way up the front office chain, that you got a kid here that looks like he can handle it. Like, he is not, you're not hearing any reports about Daniel Jones. He's too raw. He's not ready yet. And on the field, he doesn't look that way. And I was thinking about it with, when you take a look at the last, let's say, you know, year and a half now, when the Giants made the decision to take Saquon Barkley, and Sam Darnold went the next pick to the Jets. And if Darnold turns into an all-pro and wins a Super Bowl and all that, the Giants will always look bad. But you know what? If Barkley, who has all the tools to be a Hall of Fame running back, let's face it, and he had the best rookie year arguably of any running back ever last year, if even if Daniel Jones is, what, Andy Dalton, you can't really kill the Giants for the decision they made if Barkley is as special as that. If you went the next year and got a quarterback who can be good to pair with a potential all-time running back, and I don't want to get too hyperbolic there, maybe they didn't mess it up so bad.
Well, if Barkley is Jim Brown, for instance, then, okay, you're going to look back and say, no one, I don't think anyone says that Barkley is the suspect part of what they did. It was just not planning around the quarterback or hoping that they lucked into one this year. If Daniel Jones works out, it's Dave Gettleman, and we already, you know, there's already the jokes out on Twitter, which make a lot of sense, about Dave Gettleman sitting back in his easy chair in his office saying, F you to essentially Mike Francesa and every single media person ever that ripped on me.
That's how it works. Daniel Jones works out.
He's going to enjoy it. Like, I'm kind of, Daniel Jones makes the Giants more fun to watch. One of the things I liked in this game, because he's had really good pass protection in general, and so quarterbacks are going to look better that way. But he did have a couple throws against pressure in this game, and he's not afraid to just rip it down 30, 35 yards with
that's
pressure,
what I love about him.
Pressure in his face. And it almost makes, it made me think about that. I think I've been a little anti-Giants over the years on this podcast, but I think once the Daniel Jones era starts, that's all over. And I'm going to enjoy Dave Gettleman just like bringing up the Daniel Jones draft pick in every conversation and talking trash to basically every reporter forever, if that happens. And it'd be delightful.
And I think that, you know, you can talk about him all day, but you mentioned it, their line. You've got Kevin Zeitler. Will Hernandez looks like they've found someone very stable for a long time. Their line was such a disaster for so long that he stepped in at the perfect time.
Nate Solder's a problem, though. I think that's under the radar.
Carl Lawson was giving him the business.
There was a sequence with Jones where he completed a downfield pass about 35 yards, then got walloped, got destroyed on like almost like a double hit from each side, lost the ball, got up, and then one or two plays later stood tall in the pocket and put one right down to the goal line that led to a touchdown. Like, that stuff is pretty impressive.
One note on Eli. I think it's worth noting that David Deal, former Giants offensive lineman, told Anthony Munoz, current Bengals analyst, that he hasn't seen Eli throw with this much velocity in a number of years.
I feel like some former Giant Eli teammate says that every
time. I mean, but what's
been like is every quarterback is getting that compliment this summer. It's got a little more.
It's always like
on
it's
the
Sean O'Hara is like, it looks, you know,
but then you watch,
stronger than ever.
And you watch anything he's throwing deep, and then you watch Daniel Jones, and who do you want?
Daniel Jones. Many times.
Anybody else throw out?
I would say I looked at the Ravens-Eagles game, and who knows what's going to happen with either one of these quarterbacks this year. But it was interesting to watch the journey of my boy Trace McSorley, who I've brought up a few times on this show. Number one, I love what the Ravens did here. There was one play in the very early part of the game,
Trace,
where they essentially handed it off to a running back, to Justice Hill, on a play where they had three offensive linemen in front of him and six people like split out wide. The play totally failed, but I loved it. But McSorley in general like looked interesting to me enough where I think you could find ways to use him to some degree on the field in places. If you were going to do that with RG3, I would rather try it with Trace McSorley at this point.
He made the team last night. They're not cutting it now.
He should have. And then I think on the other side, Josh McCown, it kind of just shows you that, I mean, there was a play where at some point they feel like in 4 or 5 days he's learned the protections and the entire scheme to such a degree and audibles that he did so much pre-snap that he walked over during a timeout to the sideline and Carson Wentz and the coaches were all giggling with him because they couldn't believe how much he'd picked up. And that you can just roam around network television for a while or cable television. And then if you've done this long enough, roll back into a team and unfurl 200-something yards and make J.J. Arcega-Whiteside look like he should be on the first team offense.
Professional quarterback.
Right?
Here, Josh McCown.
But McCown still has it. And it makes me wonder, you go some of the backups around the league and say, You did not yank Josh McCown out of retirement. Some of these clowns roaming around. You got Kevin Hogan, please.
He played against first-teamers last year and couldn't play anymore.
I'm not saying Josh McCown is always going to be Josh McCown, though. He's going to come in and do some
great things. I love Josh McCown.
And some bad things.
He's a coach on the field.
Right.
His first three drives last night, it looked like he should have stayed in retirement. And then all of a sudden, he caught fire.
If the Eagles front office decided to do it, they're a front office I buy into right now, and so I like the move.
I'm wary of...
I hate the move.
I like it.
I'm wary of buying into... any preseason hype, but this does look like the best Patriots defense in a little while. And in that game, it's a preseason, but if Cam Newton hadn't got hurt, the story would have been, the Panthers starting offense got steamrolled. They averaged less than 2 yards per play against the Patriots when the two starters were out there. Like, they were just, guys are flying all over, and it's guys who have been in the system a long time, and it's a very deep secondary. I think Belichick is loving that he's the coordinator for this specific defense, because I think they're primed.
Can I ask one question? Why are we going up to, is it the Ottawa Blue Bombers field, and finding out hours before the game that the NFL teams don't like where the end zone is positioned, and suddenly we're playing an NFL preseason game on an 80-yard field that looks somewhat suspect to begin with? I know there's probably people even inside this building that would be annoyed and bringing that up, but like, why aren't we 3 or 4 months ahead of time scoping that out and saying, this is appropriate, and we have teams sign off, or we don't?
I was like, are they going to count the stats from this game? I mean, this is ridiculous. They're playing on an 80-yard field.
I mean, and this comes...
What?
This comes a year after the Mexico City.
What are we talking about?
I don't know.
The fiasco. Where the field was wet, so they couldn't get it safe enough for the players.
I mean, the Packers, for those who hadn't heard the story, they were going to play their starters in this game. The Raiders were not... anyways, but they decided not to because of this 80-yard funky field.
Well, and the Packers lost first-round linebacker Rashawn Garrett. We don't know how serious it is, but carted off the field.
Can I do it real quick?
The 80-yard field.
Sure.
Ryan Finley, Bengals quarterback. I think they have something impressive there. They've got something interesting behind Andy Dalton. He has looked really good 3 weeks in a row. Accurate, savvy. Hollywood Brown, Ravens rookie, first rounder, back in playing finally, looked pretty good. And my favorite thing of the preseason so far, Matt Millen back in the booth. This guy,
that's great.
We thought he was on death's doorstep.
He was.
To quote Damashek, not just surviving, but living. He's dropping lines like later Raiders linebackers dropping interceptions, and he says, I've seen better hands on a clock.
A great broadcaster, and it annoys me. Of course, he's going to be remembered for his time as the general manager, and he's gone to college in terms of broadcasting. But people are always like, why should we listen to Matt Millen like as a broad? It's like, well, what is a lot of broadcasting? Doesn't mean that you're not a smart person who's really good. He's always been one of my favorite announcers.
It's a different skill set
than
running.
Exactly.
Matt Millen got a heart transplant. You cannot be closer to death's door.
No.
Then when you literally have your heart taken out of your body and you're given the heart of another human being. That's pretty cool.
Live it up, Matt Millen.
By the way, it is Winnipeg, not Ottawa, for the people in Canada that were about to tweet at me. Don't want to hear about it. Love you, Canada. Love Canada, beautiful nation.
That's what's happening in the preseason. Let's go, week one. Get here. Greg wrote a banger. There's no two ways around it. 2009. Here's the headline. NFL.com.
I mean, I don't do the headlines. What is it?
You had something to do with it. 2019 NFL preseason : training camp surprises for all 32 teams.
I like that.
A little bit of SEO, but quite direct.
So you went through every team. You threw out a surprise. So, Greg, why don't you kind of steer the ship here with of your list of 32 surprises. And actually, if you read the piece, Mark, did you read it?
I
know you did.
Outline.
Wow, there's highlights.
This guy's prepped.
Whoa.
You're on fire today, Mark. If you read it the way Mark did, you know you get more than 32 surprises here.
That's annotated.
Yeah, some teams got multiple.
32
got
to be about teams, but it's
46 surprises.
I'd say there are 57 surprises.
Abridged, annotated.
Let's say 46 to 57 surprises in this content. Greg, of that list of 46 to 57, what were some of yours that you liked the most? Or the most interesting, intriguing?
Well, Quinnen Williams' start at nose tackle didn't take, according to Connor Hughes of The Athletic. You know, they thought they'd huge start inside between Henry Anderson and Leonard Williams, and I think they've decided that's not his best position. I don't think this is a huge deal, but I think he's going to probably start the year rotating, you know, maybe coming off the bench, which to me was a little bit of a surprise learning that, and they're waiting – doesn't mean he hasn't looked good in the preseason, but he's not going to be a guy who just steps out there and is playing 50 snaps a game.
Maybe trade Leonard Williams to the Texans for Jadeveon Clowney and then slide over Quinnen Williams to the end where he could play every snap. And then you have a game-changing Clowney in the mix as well.
Not that crazy. I'm warming up to your trade idea.
How many defensive linemen are they going to move over the course of 4 or 5 years?
That's what they do. There's a churn. There's always churn in the NFL, Mark.
Except unless you're the Cowboys and you resign the entire position group and stay strong for the next six, 7 years.
What was that? The Sons of Anarchy?
What?
Wilkerson, Richardson.
Yes, that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes, that was it.
Grown up and moved on.
What else, Greg?
How about DJ Chark? Remember him, the first round pick of the Jaguars a year ago, who had kind of a disastrous.
He wasn't first round.
Or was he at the top of the second round?
He was second.
He is now one of their top three receivers. They came into the season knowing who their top three receivers are, and it doesn't include Marquise Lee, and it doesn't include Keelan Cole, who we used to write hosannas about on this podcast. Uh-huh. And so it's now Chris Conley, who used to be with Kansas City. It's Dede Westbrook, who Mark's boy John DeFilippo said is the best route runner he's ever coached, which includes Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen.
Is he still in your stable of boys, Mark, in 2019?
No reason not to think he's a great guy.
And it's DJ Chark, who ESPN called their preseason training camp MVP. So he kind of came out of nowhere, and he's going to have a role there.
Speaking of preseason and training camp MVPs, and this was a bit of a saucy subject on the Fantasy Extravaganza, both The Athletic and ESPN named DeSean Jackson the Eagles' training camp MVP, which Greg astutely points out, not a sentence he expected to write in 2019. Is it possible that we get a vintage D-Jack season?
Yes. I mean,
1,300 yards.
I think him in Tampa last year, he's been so underrated that he's looked like the same DeSean Jackson the whole time. But Jameis Winston is not great throwing the deep ball, and that just wasn't a very good offense in general, and that he's looked really good. That's my opinion.
What is a vintage D-Jack season? I'm going to look that up while you guys argue. Wes, you disagree.
800 yards, 4 touchdowns.
At his peak, he was a guy that could average 18 to 20 yards per reception.
He's just, I can't remember a guy that old that fast. Maybe, I mean, Darryl Green certainly. There's certainly been some. But, man, he hasn't lost any speed.
He led the NFL in yards per reception last year at 18.9 over 41 catches.
Dan, I think you're going to like that this is out there.
What?
This caught my eye down in Carolina. Longtime Panthers hero,
oh, yeah,
Graham
that's
Gano.
On my list too, if ones I need to bring up.
Veteran kicker Graham Gano could lose his job to someone named Joey Sly. Sounds fake. Which is an even bigger surprise than Cam Newton's deep ball reported looking better than ever during camp. Until
you're on Dan's corner.
Well, just saying.
No, you're welcome on the kicking corner, but I want to keep these good kickers that are going to get fired.
You need a hush-hush scenario
off
here.
Off the radar.
Gano's going to be kicking for the Bears.
Right, one of these guys is for the Bears. You know, maybe
I wouldn't mind the Browns taking one of
you guys can have Sam Ficken.
No, I don't want Ficken.
And maybe it's Sly that gets traded. Is someone going to trade for Sly, who has reportedly he's just looked so good, and Gano had a pretty iffy year last year, and Gano's just not healthy yet. That's part of the issue.
Sly's got a leg. That's a good jersey.
Joey Sly.
Yeah.
That's Sly. You have to have Joey. What a great kicker that. Name.
Yes.
Who do you want? Sam Ficken or do you want Joey Sly?
You want Joey Sly.
Joey Sly. You can trust him. He'll get the job done. Maybe you can't trust him actually, but he'll get it done. He'll get what he wants. Which I think it was through the uprights.
I think it was good that you noted all these for like the third or fourth year in a row. All this pileup of maladies and injuries in San Francisco. I feel like 10 years from now we're going to get like an Aaron Brockovich type movie about what is happening to the drinking water around the facility. I mean, it's like something is going on here, and it's ridiculous.
Brockovich,
it's like Chernobyl.
But I mean, something unusual
is occurring.
The
midnight showing of that one.
That's the football movie we need.
Carlos Hyde, not so long ago, was, the golden boy in San Francisco and didn't work out in Cleveland, bounced around. And now, Greg, quite a surprise potentially that he might not even make the final 53 in Kansas City.
They gave him $800,000 guaranteed. I mean, this is where our editors, Gennaro Felice, what a great job.
Gennaro. Oh, he's great.
I had the wrong signing bonus. He just fixed it. Didn't even say
it. Didn't brag about it. Didn't shoot you a nasty note.
I noticed it when I reread it. I was like, oh, sorry. They gave him almost $1 million, and Darwin Thompson and a former cornerback, Tre'Mond Smith, who's like a special teamer, who converted to running back just a few weeks ago, is going to make the team over Carlos Hyde. It's a bad sign if you're Carlos Hyde.
Quick breaking news, Ricky Hollywood. Taylor Lewan, who the All-Pro Titans left tackle, who made an impassioned plea when word got out that he was going to be suspended for violating the league's performance-enhancing substances policy. Well, it didn't work out. His appeal to the league didn't change anything. So he's out the first four games of the 2019 season.
Did a lie detector test, which many people apparently don't believe in.
Also, if you...
I mean, I understand scientifically.
Have you read up on Taylor Lewan at all?
I mean, I know many facts. There are some interesting facts about Taylor Lewan out there.
I'm just saying, I don't know. They're guys I believe. Some guys I don't believe.
It was an impassioned plea.
Have you watched the current season of Mindhunter?
I will be doing that soon.
One of the serial killers, they find a book stashed in his drawer, How to Beat a Lie Detector Test. And then he proceeded to beat the lie detector test.
Let's go on. Greg.
How about the Steelers defense? I want Wes to jump in here, too.
Let's talk some Sam McGuavin.
Oh, okay.
Ow!
Now you know how to say his name.
Sam McGuavin. Well, yeah, he's been running with the starters, the Dolphins. This guy's, while Kiko Alonso is out with an undisclosed injury, and Greg has opined, may not even make the team. Sam McGuavin, former CFL player. Is playing alongside Sam Baker, who looks really good.
Yeah, Jerome Baker, who had a great game, and he's supposedly look good. This is what happens when new coaches come in sometimes. They had a second-round pick in Raekwon McMillan, who might not make the team. Kiko Alonso, who is kind of, you know, with the old regime, and they've got their new guys. If nothing else, they got to try some young players and see what happens.
Kiko Alonso is kind of a good villain to have on your team. He's a Esther. I could see him landing with the Raiders in about 3 weeks. Yes.
How about the Steelers defensive back? I feel like that's been a trouble spot forever, and maybe this is just camp hype. Like, I'm not too excited about Steven Nelson, who they gave a lot of money to as a Chiefs cornerback. But they're saying Cameron Sutton and Artie Burns, who are two pretty high draft picks, both had really good camps, especially Sutton, and that Edmonds, their safety, who was their first-round pick a year ago, too, is really coming on in his second year. Joe Hayden, who they've really loved. I think they're going to give him a long-term contract since he's been in Pittsburgh. Suddenly, that secondary looks pretty good. Mike Tomlin has the defense. Like, why is this defense not good? It should be really good. I don't know why. There's no excuse for it not to be a top 8 to 10 defense. I think it's really talented.
People are very annoyed with our ability to constantly bag on the Detroit Lions, but you did note that Matthew Stafford's practice reports, etc., have been up and down.
He's throwing with a lot of zip this summer.
Well, where are we? Are we feeling good?
Or? No, that's what they're saying.
I mean, I don't know what to expect. It's Daryl Bevel who changes his offenses depending on what team he's at, but they've just been, you know, he had those joint practices with the Patriots, Stafford, and just in general, the writers there have just been saying that the offense just hasn't had it going, and you worry about that a little bit with a veteran quarterback.
Are we sure they've shown up to camp yet?
That was a few years ago. You got on them for not showing up.
Have we seen their first team offense at all?
They didn't. Yeah, and they didn't.
Even their second team offense.
Or their first team defensive line is just now getting back healthy. Almost all of those guys have been hurt at some point.
Well, they're playing the Cardinals in week one, so we know that Arizona's keeping it under wraps. Detroit's saying, we're going to do the same thing. We're not going to show you anything, and we're going to unveil our massively run-heavy offense and surprise you just as much, Cardinals defense. And you know what? Against
the Cardinals defense, fast enough.
Well, against the Cardinals defense, they might be fine.
Jameis Winston has always had a bit of a sneaky dad bod. If you remember Hard Knocks, you know, and shirtless scenes, you know, he's obviously a well-built, he's an incredible, you know, athlete, but not cut out of stone like other professionals. Well, contract
doesn't have
your
the
body.
Derek Carr arms.
No, he doesn't have the pipes of Derek Carr, but he's got the bod working right now, Greg, and you know what that means.
You can just tell it in his face. What does it mean?
I don't know. He's going to win the MVP.
Oh, okay.
Usually it doesn't mean anything.
I mean, it doesn't take much for me to find something positive to say about Jameis Winston going, at least just like hoping that he's going to turn around. But you could tell when he was scrambling, and he's always been an underrated scrambler. I think he's a pretty good scrambler, but you can just tell he's quicker this year. I mean, he's lost some weight. His face just looks like it's college Jameis
Winston. You know what? They're going to have such a hard decision, the Bucks. Let's say he has a better season and he's a little bit more consistent. He keeps his nose clean and turns the ball over a little bit less. Maybe the Bucks don't go anywhere, but he shows some growth in the Bruce Arians era. Are they going to give him like a massive contract?
The thing
I'd
say,
they're kind of going to be in a very tough spot and a big decision.
It was Jason Light's pick. He's just been extended. If he has that good year, it looks like
you franchise tag,
right? I mean, well, really, is that what they'll do? You think?
Yeah, I mean, buys him a year to make up their mind whether it's real or not.
It's a fair thought.
The worst idea.
Oh, he could go the Kirk Cousins route,
or
what? Sign for that kind of money,
or the Blake Bortles route.
Well, the Bucks could just drag it out if they don't believe him. They don't believe that, you know, they want to give him a mega contract. Yeah. Wes nailed it, is what I'm saying.
What if that team goes 5-11? I don't know. At some point, can we not be totally disappointing compared to our roster?
Yeah, if they go 5-11.
I don't think he's coming back as the starter.
Yeah, need progress for sure. Anything else? Anybody want to jump in with one of their own? Or Greg, another one of yours? All right. That's that. It's Friday.
Everybody's
working on the bigger. Good stuff, Greg. Check it out, NFL.com/Rosenthal.
Thank you.
A real banger. You'll notice the bangers. There's an uptick in bangers now as week one approaches. Mark, you've had bangers. Wes, you've had bangers.
Wes had a great piece on all the rookies to keep an eye on that's have a good training camp.
Thank you.
This week.
We should talk about that. Let's get into it. Let's extend the pod.
Wait, let's do it next week.
I, by the way, have a surprise banger that could come out any time between tonight and 2046. Oh.
Gotta watch out for the surprise.
Mark.
No, we can't say anything more.
We can say more.
No, we absolutely cannot.
Well, we can say that you pre-wrote an obituary. People do that in news organizations. All
we just won't say it for
Judy Batista is generally the go-to pre-write obit writer at this company. She writes a lot of them. I'm not even joking, but they trusted Mark for a big one.
It puts you in a weird spot because not that I'm actually this, but it's like, do I really want to wait 35 years for this piece to come out? It's like, you know, or you...
Can you... Is it okay to call an obituary a banger? I mean, that's...
No!
No!
I would call it the last word. It's the last word.
It's indecent.
Mark, it's not a banger.
On our text chain, he called it a long form. I'm like, you doing 3,500 words or something on this? What's going on?
It's a major figure.
This individual better, you know, at some point expire, because that would just be a waste of a lot of work.
At some point they will. Will our organization still, you know, the file could get lost in the mix.
That's right. Like, I hope this doesn't happen, but it's certainly possible that you could perish before this person or any one of us. Or
totally.
Or Mark's status of employment with this company could perish. You're not going to run it then.
I did think about that.
We should have turned this down.
Like, I don't want to get into someone else's business, but like, you know, if Judy, let's say, you know, there's different, you know, everyone knows talent as contracts. So when her contract is up, can't she just be like, well, what are you going to do with the 35 obits I wrote? You got to bring me back. You can't run those if I'm no longer with the company.
Good negotiating.
It's a great leverage.
I guess you could yank the byline.
So I'm a businessman, and that's how I've been thinking.
Save it for the Morbid Humor podcast.
All right. Before we go, a couple new. Greg. You want to get a little plug in? Your little side pod is coming back.
Oh, I didn't know where
your little side.
I didn't know where you were going.
Your little star behind
the glass. Do I have something to promote? Oh yes,
the little rising star. She'll be leaving us soon enough. She continues.
The Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project is coming back to Comedy Central podcast for season 2, starting September 3rd. So people should catch up, you know, with the old episodes.
Catch up now. And Ricky, by the way, connect the dots. Ricky's doing this unnamed fantasy project with Rank, where she's on camera. She is a big part of the Jeselnik Rosenthal show. She's not going to be sitting behind the glass too much longer. It's just...
We're like, so when you're in middle school and you move to a completely different part of the country, you go to a different school, you become a high school person, you say you're going to keep in touch with all those middle school friends back in Minnesota. By the time you're in a sophomore in high school, you will never speak to any of them ever again.
She's not the kind of bird you can keep caged, you know?
No.
Yeah, but I'd never leave you guys.
Well, you say that now.
Well, we'll play that in the episode where we say goodbye to you. just clip that. Clip that.
And we heard Connie Fox earlier. She was on the latest Throwback Pod, where we talked about her senior year of high school, August 2002. Some bangers in that era.
I mean, you're revealing her age, which I don't think is a problem, but just on that.
She is, you know, Connie is, she is without any type of you know, some people get sensitive about that. Conley's not one of them.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
Well, I was not assessing differently. I was just saying factually people could put together what her age is if they were curious.
They probably wouldn't have thought about it, but then you brought it up. And
well,
now
we should
they're...
cut this from the show.
Apology.
So check that out at Throwback Pod. And let's all have a nice weekend. Let's have a safe weekend. Okay? All right. You guys are ready to go. Stan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss. I could sit here all day. You guys are ready to go. And Ricky Hollywood behind the glass.
Go for it.
Till Monday.